I know he's at first. You've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore. I want you to get up right now. Get up, go to your windows, open them, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Listen, you fuckers, you screwheads. Here is a man who would not take it anymore. A man who stood up against the scum, the cunts, the dogs, the filth, the shit. Here is someone who stood up.
Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to another edition of You Have Tread on Me. Today is Sunday the 27th of 2011. And I want to welcome everybody to the show tonight. We've got a great group of people already showing up already in the chat room. And I want to thank everybody for listening in. You know, without you guys have been doing what you guys are doing out there, we would still be in the, you know, we'd still be kind of scrambling around. I'd still be out there trying to, you know, screaming committee of safety, a plan, militia, and nobody would be, you know, and nobody would really be listening to me still. It's because of a lot of you out there that people are actually starting to listen. You know, when I came back from my little hiatus there, taking my break, my vacation, my sanity, you know, my sanity sabbatical, when we first came back, I didn't have very many listeners. In fact, I think my first show I had 5-6 people show up. That was it. You know, now, you know, we're getting up into the 20s and 30s again. And we haven't been back very long. In fact, most of you just started showing up here in the last few weeks. So I appreciate you letting other people know, because I'm not marketing the show anymore. And I'm really appreciative of you, the listeners that I have out there. And for the input and the feedback that you guys have, and for all the work you're doing out there in your local areas, in your communities. And not just there, but everywhere, you know, but in your region, in your state. I know many of you are working with groups outside of your state. Keep up the good work, everybody. So tonight, we're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to do something we haven't done in a very, very, very long time. We're going to talk about people and events. Imagine that. People and events. We normally talk about solutions here. We talk about a plan. We talk about the how. We talk about the infrastructure needed to restore our constitutional government. And that is all we talk about. All the subjects that we discuss the problems of that area and then how we can fix all the problems of the country, period. And it's not our plan. It's not like we were, you know, it's not like anybody here was some incredible genius who was able to factor all the, you know, came up with something new. You know what we did? We actually just read a little bit. We didn't watch YouTube. We actually read a little bit. And we read what the Founding Fathers did, and we saw it with open eyes. And people and various people looked at things that they had done, and we began talking and learning from each other. And we came up with a plan, and it's the Founders' plan. Exactly what they did. Not only that, though, it's also the constitutional way in which we're going to restore our government. Restore our freedoms. But things are happening. Interesting things are happening. Not just all over the world, but here in the U.S. as well. Interesting things are happening. So I felt it appropriate that we talk about the death throes of our republic. Because if we look back to history, and for maybe once in the first time in history, we break that old saying that the one thing that man learns from history is that man does not learn from history. Maybe if we look back now, and we learn from history. We become the first ones to actually learn. Or maybe the second. The founders did a pretty good job. But if we look back at history, and we look at all the empires of the world, and we look at how they were destroyed, we have been following that path perfectly, to the letter. So tonight's show is Death Throes of Our Republic. Welcome, everybody. Thank you for listening in. My guest tonight is One Angry Brother. I met him at on RAM, Well-Regulated American Citizen. And I find these people that just seem to have a lot of intelligent things to say, a lot of ideas, not just the ones who keep prattling on about the events and the people, but who talk about solutions and who see the bigger picture. So, One Angry Brother, thanks for coming on again. I appreciate it.
Hey, Randy, thanks. Hey, glad to be back, man. Glad to be back in the house. And hey to everybody out there. Thanks for inviting me back, Randy. Been waiting for a while.
Hey, no, it's I enjoyed the last time you were on. I really did enjoy the last time you were on. Like I said, man, I've, you know, when we talked, you know, I told you I wanted, you know, I'd like to talk to you for a while, you know, to get, you know, see if we could get you on the show, because there's so many people out there saying so much stuff, and there's enough, there's too much information overload going on as it is, you know, and I'm really thinking about who comes on this show. I'm not trying to bring on gurus. I want real people, real Americans with real things to say. So you're always welcome back. So this was your idea, this show, this subject. You know, what the hell is happening to our country, our dying country, perhaps? And can we save it? So I'm going to let you start off with this. You know, what are your, you know, where do you want to take us on this? I'm not used to talking about events and people, so I'm going to let you steer the ship on this one. Where do you want to go with it?
Okay, well, I mean, you know, just world events, man. I mean, you know, and how it's really affecting the U.S. Because we really don't know, you know, our history. You know, I was in the chat room talking to, you know, some of the other guys and talking to you about, you know, here we are repeating history once again because, you know, our leaders and or people that have been elected to represent us, you know, they have no clue. It seems like that they haven't read a history book ever, you know, and we're coming right back, you know, into, like I said, the death throes of the Republic, you know. We're in a depression. I'll call it a depression for most people, you know. And for some of us, yeah, it's a, you know, a recession or whatever you want to call it. But I mean, if you look at the actual numbers and you look at what's going on, I mean, 43 million people plus on food stamps, never happened. You know, 14 to 15 million people out of work. I think that's more than the population that was out of work during the Great Depression, you know. So, you know, it's some things going on, man, and a lot of people, they have really no knowledge of what's going on because, as we say, they're still sleeping and they're not really paying attention to what's going on around them. And, you know, those people are going to get hurt pretty bad because they haven't prepared, they have no preparation, and, you know, and when you fail to prepare, you know, bad things happen to you.
Well, you know, we were a different people then. When you talked about, you know, the during that depression time, you know, we were a different people then. We had 25% of our population living on the land farming, producing food. We had a different mentality then. We were industrious then. Today, I've seen homeless people standing underneath. I've seen people begging, or not homeless. I don't know if they're homeless, but I've seen people holding up signs saying, "We'll work for food," while they're standing underneath an Arby's sign saying, "Now hiring."
Right. Yeah. It's pretty funny. I actually had, you know, a person I saw stand on a corner, you know, with the food. So I said, "Come on, I'll go get you something to eat." You know, he said, "No, never mind. I'll just take the money." You know, so I said, "Okay, well, you're not too hungry then." You know, but I mean, but you're right. This country, you know, all the industrialization, of course, is going overseas, you know, for whatever reasons. There's a, you know, number of reasons, you know, whether it's the taxes, whether it's the corporations wanting the cheap labor, you know, for whatever reasons, it's leaving the United States. It's gone. Also, the agriculture. I mean, we don't even feed ourselves anymore, truthfully. You know, I think, what, last year or a couple years ago was the first time we started importing wheat. I mean, we used to be the country that fed the world. You know, and now we can hardly feed ourselves. And you know what they say, if you can't feed yourself, you can't sustain yourself. So, and that's the road that we're going down, you know, in the United States, to where, you know, we're becoming, you know, I hate to use the term third world country, but, I mean, and we haven't gotten there yet. I mean, if we don't turn this thing around, you know, we will soon, I feel, be there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And Randy pointed out in the Great Depression, we had 25% of people living off land. Today, it's about 2%. Everybody's been herded off into the cities, and we've lost all of our industry. We're going to be in a world of hurt this time. And, you know, any of these rocket scientists out there that think getting into a new war is going to stimulate our economy, well, we don't have any manufacturing left to stimulate. You know, it's actually, you know, quite ridiculous, and we're going down this rapid downhill slide. It's not too late yet, but we really need to get up on it. The whole thing with people standing around with signs, you know, we see an epidemic of that. You know, there's more and more people that are just desperate. It's been going on for a while. I remember when I was still living in Santa Fe, there was a guy at the gas station across the street from my apartment holding a sign, and he said, you know, need money. It's for beer. Why lie? And I got a big chuckle off that. I said, you know, wow, that's pretty funny. And I had a whole case of cold beer in the fridge, and I went and got a beer and gave it to him. Say, hey, you know, at least you're being honest about it. You know, the people out there that are just, you know, asking for handouts and, you know, doing self-destructive things with it, it's, you know, like Randy said, you know, a guy wanted, you know, to work for food under a, you know, Arby's sign that says now hiring. I mean, you know, good grief. You know, we're really in a world of hurt here, and we've got to turn this around quick.
You know, that sign, that individual, I thought it was rather descriptive of the state in which I lived at the time, which was New Mexico. New Mexico is one of those, it used to be one of those old West states where people walked around with guns on their hips. I know I did. Anywhere I wanted except for, you know, government buildings and liquor stores and banks, which kind of upset me because, you know, I should be able to walk into a bank with my gun and protect my money while I'm walking into the bank, but hey. Now, though, New Mexico has, for the last, too many damn years that I can remember, it has been the second poorest state in the entire country. It had to actually engage in a statewide campaign to start getting 14-year-old girls from getting pregnant. The average birth age was 15 years old. And let me tell you, they tended not to get jobs, which meant that New Mexico was also one of the biggest welfare states in the country, if not the biggest. Now, it would have been the biggest, except our population in New Mexico was only 1.5 million people. So, kind of hard to have the biggest welfare state when you only have 1.5 million people.
If you figure it per capita, though.
But per capita, we had a massive welfare state. And the rest of the state, the vast majority of it, was government contract jobs, which, again, is jobs created only through the tax dollars of you, the people.
Right, and, you know, in those type of jobs, you know, they can't sustain, you know, truthfully, unless, well, I tell you what, we do manufacture war, you know, and that's what we do. I mean, our, you know, output to the world is war, if you really think about it. I mean, we've been at war for over 10 straight years now. You know, well, actually, I don't even take that back. We've been at war since the Korean War. I mean, in some conflict somewhere in different parts of the world since the Korean War. We manufacture war. That's how we sustain. That's how we keep this economy going. And that's what they're doing now. They're going to take us back to war because we're broke. Everybody knows that we're broke, and they need to keep pumping the, you know, the money through the system, and that's the only way it can happen because we manufacture nothing else out of the United States but war.
Well, we produce attorneys like crazy, and we manufacture a whole bunch of laws and regulations.
Well, yeah, true laws and regulations against us.
More attorneys to make things more convoluted.
And lots of financial derivatives.
So, what do you think? I mean, you know, look back at Rome. You know, the fall of Rome began when the Senate became corrupt. When the Senate began doing things that they had never done before. Like, I truly believe, and, you know, I thank this to, a gentleman named Dan Carlin, who puts out a podcast called Hardcore History. If you've never listened to it, anybody, go listen. Dan Carlin, Hardcore History. He's got a series. He does a lot of series. One of his series was called The Death Throes of the Republic, Ancient Rome.
That was great program. It's still ongoing. There's yet another chapter. You can go to dancarlin.com and check it out. It's also available on iTunes. Very, very well-researched and well-produced programs. You know, there's not a whole lot of programs we really love, but, you know, Hardcore History is right there. It's awesome.
You know, Dan Carlin said that the fall of Rome began when Rome began engaging on imperialism. Because in the Roman days, the senators controlled armies. They controlled the legions. Each senator was, certain if you got enough power, you could control these legions and they could go out and you could engage in war. Gain glory was the first part for your family. Glory for your family, glory for Rome. But it was a spoils. But during that time, they had freemen on the land. They had free Romans on the land, free citizens, and you had to be a landowner to be a citizen. The only way to own land was to be a citizen. And the only way to be a citizen was to own land. You had a stake in the country. Now, when Rome started engaging upon all these wars or these invasions and wars with other people, Hannibal and other ones, these freemen on the land were taken off the land and sent out of country for very, very long periods of time. They were unable to pay the taxes due on their lands, therefore the land was being gobbled up by other people. And eventually, all the land in Rome ended up in the hands of a very small, select group of people, the powerful, who were running the land with slaves. Now, that presented a problem because the only way you could be in the legion was if you owned land and you were a landowner. So then they started the immigration thing. They started allowing the slaves into the armies to fill the ranks. And they started giving citizenship out to the world, to everybody. It no longer became something that was cherished, something that was strived for. It no longer became something that was respected.
Well, is that not us today?
You know, that's the question I'm asking. Is that not us today?
Well, yeah, totally. No doubt. Totally. Totally it is. I mean, because we have immigrants, you know, come in. And I'm not against immigration, you know, by any stretch of the imagination. You know, if you come in and do it legally, hey, I'm fine with that. But if you do come in and do it legally, then you assimilate to the United States. You assimilate to what we do. You become a citizen of this country. You know, and that's the way it is supposed to work. That's why you come here, because you want to be here to leave. That's why you left wherever you came from to become part of this country. You know, but it's not happening today, and the government, I mean, they don't even require people to speak English. I mean, for Christ's sake, we, you know, put everything in 30 freaking different languages so everybody here can read their own language. What the hell is that? You know, I've traveled all over the world, and this is the only country that does that. You know, I remember I was in Japan. You know, we had to ride the train, you know, to go to Tokyo. Everything's in Japanese. There's nothing in English. If you can't read colors or follow, you know, the stops, then you're just shit out of luck. You're lost. You know, and I mean, that's because they believe in country, they believe in pride. And if you're going to be there, then you need to speak Japanese or at least be able to read it. You know, but this country, we have given up our sovereignty to everybody else. You know, we have no sovereignty left. You know, at least right now, in my opinion, I mean, we can get it back, we need to take it back, but it's going to take some firm leadership and some strong leadership, you know, in the country, whether it comes from Washington or the president or starting in the communities, you know, up through the states, you know, like you talked about with the committees of safety, you know, but it has to be a collective effort or it's just not going to work.
You know, Franklin made a telling statement, and I don't think people really understood it for what it was. Maybe they did. I don't know. Maybe we're just now understanding it today. But he was asked the question, what kind of government were we given? Or what kind of government do we have? And he said, a republic, if you can keep it. And we say these things. You know, we spout these old sayings and these cliche, you know, quotes from people from the past. But do we ever, you know, how many of us truly sit there and just look at a saying for one day and just contemplate it all day, looking at all the angles of it? And that keeping it part, if you can keep it, If you can keep it. He didn't say, if all of you can keep it. He said, if you individually, you, that one person he was talking to, if you can keep it.
Yeah, you know, these guys throw around, you know, the word democracy, democracy, like we are a democracy, but we're not. Like I said, we, you know, was given this country as a republic, a representative republic. And, you know, and you know, like they say, I think it was Thomas Jefferson that said, all democracies commit suicide. No, it was actually Madison or John Adams, I think. But all democracies eventually commit suicide, and we're not a democracy, but that's what everybody has been led to believe, that we are a democracy and we're going to spread democracy around the world. Well, we're not even a democracy, so how can we spread it around the world? You know, and say, Thomas Jefferson even said that democracy is nothing more than mob rule, where 51% of the people may take away the rights of the other 49. I mean, and that's what it is. And we're not that.
No, we're not. We are not. And I think that was the first step. You know, redefining what we were. So we forgot what we were. You know, Rome changed. It went from being a republic to being an empire. And what has our spreading of democracy done? Well, we have military bases in, what, 180 countries plus throughout the world? Rome at the time had military bases throughout the known world.
You know, I saw a statistic the other day. I think it's like, what, 196, give or take, you know, countries in the world. And we give foreign aid to like 152 of them. You know, so we're actually involved in 152 other countries. The government, or, you know, their sovereignty or whatever. And that's insane. I mean, we don't even take care of the United States enough. I mean, just look at our southern border. You know, look at, I mean, Arizona, for example. I know there's a lot of guys, you know, in the chat and coming ram, you know, from Arizona. It's insane what the federal government is trying to do to them. They're trying to create a situation where they can protect their state, protect the citizens of their state. Our federal government and President Obama, you know, puts lawsuits out to prevent them from doing that. How insane is that? I mean, really, how insane is that?
That's about as insane as believing the phrase, "Hi, I'm from the government, I'm here to help."
Exactly. Exactly. That's true. I mean, you know, and that, things that's going on. I mean, just look around Wisconsin. I mean, we have representatives in Wisconsin running out of town so they don't have to vote. That's what they were elected to do, to make the hard decisions to vote. And they run out of town where they don't have to vote. How cowardly and cynical is that? I mean, they need to be impeached. They need to get fired, whatever. They need to hold special elections for every one of them. You know, that's what the people elected you for. You ran out on your job. I mean, and I'm sure it's going to happen in other states as well, because they were able to get away with it so far. I mean, but this place is going insane. I mean, and we look at what's going on overseas. We look at Libya. We look at, you know, Bahrain. We look at Iraq. You know, there's still a mess and hellhole, you know, that we helped create. But we're not looking close enough at the United States, you know. And maybe it's by design, maybe it's not. I'm not sure. But the citizens of this country really need to take a hard look at ourselves, you know, and really do something to, maybe we need to put the focus back, have Washington focus back on us, you know, somehow. And I don't know if it's, you know, marching, you know, of course we, you know, want to do everything by nonviolent means, you know, and by the Constitution. I mean, but I don't even know if that's possible anymore, because they don't listen. Washington is not listening to the people.
No, they are not listening to the people. And, well, you know, I think Hamilton was a great indication of the powers that be today, of how they rule. Or, you know, that's what they do. They rule. They do not... govern at the will by the will of the people, and the they're not restricted by the Constitution. Hamilton said that we needed an aristocratic body to do the thinking for the people, because the people were too stupid to think for themselves. And it needed to be
gas. I think that's actually true, though. I think, you know, it's probably become that way by design. You know, the educational systems have been, you know, sabotaged. You know, we've been dumbed down by the media, you know, lied to, you know, on every possible front. Our history is robbed from us. You know, it's beyond unacceptable, you know, what they've done.
Well, let's talk about that Wisconsin thing for a bit. I think that is a bit telling of where we are in America. And I think that we're going to see, I think that if we really look at it, we can truly see that as a microcosm of all the problems that we're facing in America today. So, you know, if you don't mind, I'd like to talk about that for a minute. Sure. And the governors running, and the state legislators running off. You know, in the past, when state legislators used to run off, they would be drugged back physically and put in that chair and held down. Even if they didn't vote, it didn't matter. But a quorum would be met.
Yeah, they don't fear us anymore. They don't respect us. They do whatever they want. There's been no consequence in the form. There's been no accountability because, you know, we haven't grown a pair and found our backbone and held them accountable. And we've got to get back to that, because if there's no consequence for them being corrupt and doing whatever they want and serving their own interest rather than our interest, then it's just going to keep happening.
You know, and it's that dragging them back and holding them down in that chair, if need be, that was required of us if we were to keep our republic. You know, we the people is a kind of a deceptive word. It somewhat implies that we the people, you individually, have power. But we forget that we're a republic, and in a republic, we only have power through representative bodies. Now, whether that body is our government or a social or a civil body made up of the people, there still has to be that representative aspect. And that means that individually we must act, but we have to act upon the way socially accepted, or the way that the Constitution says, which is through representative bodies. Now, like I said before, that can be government, that can be committees of safety. Unions are another problem, though. They are a representative body, but I have problems with unions, and I'd like to get into those as well. We got legislators running off. We have the collective bargaining power of state employees who are voting to take more from you, your pocket, for their pocket. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but mob rule is when 51% of the people get together and decide that they're going to take whatever they want from the other 49%. Am I mistaken there?
No, that is mob rule, or democracy, as they call it.
Okay, so
two wolves and a sheep voting on what's for dinner.
So we have this collective bargaining power exerting its force. Now, there's a dual side to that, and I'll get into that as well. I think there's a positive aspect that we can take a lesson from here. But we basically have this collective group of state employees who are getting together deciding that they want more from you, the taxpayer. And right now, 60% of all Americans are on a government paycheck, whether it's welfare, some kind of assistance program, or a state paycheck, a federal paycheck. It doesn't matter. They're getting their money from the government to put the roof over their head and the food on their table, which means they're getting it from the other 40%. We've exceeded that 51% now. We are truly mob rule at this point, because those 60% will never, ever vote against their ticket. They're against their own meal ticket. They will always endorse laws that will provide them more and will never take away what they're getting freely from you.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, and, unions, you know, they used to be a good thing, I would say. You know, at one time, when unions first started, they were for the people. They were for, you know, people getting higher wages and people getting benefits and things like that. But the unions of today have grown to these enormous monstrosities of nothing but political machines, you know, to where, You know, they take these people's dues, which are supposed to be for them, and they put them in political campaigns. You know, that's not what unions are for. Unions should not be able to, you know, donate to any political campaign for any favors, any lobbyist group or anything like that, you know. And that's the unions of today. So I think the unions do need to be restructured. I think the collective bargaining needs to be restricted, you know, like the governor of Wisconsin is doing. And as far as the people, you know, the teachers, you know, they want them to pay more, you know, into their, you know, pension funds, into their health care and things like that. I mean, well, they're already doing that. You know, they're doing that through their taxes. They're doing that through their payroll deductions. They're doing that through their dues, you know, different stuff of that nature. So, you know, it's, you know, I can understand their fight, you know, wanting to, you know, having to pay more because they're already paying into their system. So why should they have to pay more? You know, so I can understand their fight.
And also, it's my understanding, they're trying to do this through the mid-contract. You know, it would be quite another thing if when their contracts are up for renewal that they renegotiate them, but they're trying to, you know, we need to change the contract on here. And that's going to really upset people.
Right, yeah, you can't change the contract midstream. You know, that's the thing. I mean, one thing, if it runs out and you renegotiate, which you should. I mean, that's the thing. You know, I know, I think Washington State, and there's been other states where they renegotiated, but I think they were at the end of the contract, you know, where they renegotiated where, okay, the people paid a little bit more, you know, into the thing. You know, they got a little less on that side. You know, the collective bargaining agreement, you know, stuff went down. I mean, so that's the way it should be handled. I mean, you know, the way... You know, it's happening in Wisconsin. Like I saw something in the chat room that said, hey, that's a beta test. Wisconsin is a beta test. It's a test bit to see how much, you know, they can get away with, you know, and how much they can charge the people with. I mean, you know, it's really bad, I guess, government on the state's part because it's really not... I guess the people's pensions is part of it, you know, but it's, you know, they mishandled money, you know, they mishandled money a long time ago, and now they're in these, you know, deficits and things like that, you know, but a lot of that money, you know, that was supposed to go into these pensions and things like that, you know, these governors and these governments, you know, they put it into the stock market, they put it into these 401ks, they put it in stuff like Enron, you know, and stuff like that. They mishandled the money. There shouldn't be, you know, a deficit, you know, in state governments, because they should always have a budget. They should always work on that budget. So people shouldn't have to pay more. Yes, you know, the public, you know, sector, you know, where they're getting the pensions from, you know, from the state. But those people are paid into those pensions. They pay into those pensions every payday, you know, just like Social Security, which is not there, okay? You know, that's an example of that. We pay into it every payday, but are we going to get it? Well, you know, my generation may not get it because it's not there because of what they do. They stole the money, they spent it in other areas, and they used it without permission. And the same thing went on with the state governments.
And real quick, we've got a couple of callers on. We've got a couple of people that want to come on. First on, we'll bring the caller in first so they don't hang up on us. Then we have another person, Lori, who wanted to comment as well. And you had made some comments there about unions, and there's some other comments in there about unions, pro-union. And you made some comments that are pro-union, and I'd like to get into that as well. I think there were some telling areas there. And like I said, there's two sides to every story there. But first off, the caller, area code 202.
Hey, 202, you're on the air.
Good, how are you?
Hi, how you doing? My name is Rick Bowles. I'm one of One Angry Brother's closest friends from over 30-some years ago, believe it or not. I hate to tell my age, but that's the case. So I'm pretty happy about it.
Rick, what's up, man?
What's up?
Welcome to the show, Rick.
Hey, thanks for calling in, man. Thanks for listening.
Absolutely. And I have to start off by saying I'm a little miffed, especially at One Angry Black Brother, considering that we're from the great state of Odine, Penn City, better known as Cleveland, Ohio, the bedrock of American industrialization. And okay. I have to totally disagree with you guys as far as what you feel about the unions. The unions totally created what we have, what we call the middle class. There was no middle class prior to unions, first of all. And what you have right now going on today is the last turning of the screw of the corporatists, the banksters, the rich folks taking the last little bit from the people. And that's what you have right now. Starting with Ronald Reagan, there has never, ever been a disparity of the rich and the poor in the history of mankind. And this is the last little bit. Because it's not, because, you know, people want to say, oh, the union are elitist, are elite workers, or they're getting more than the average taxpayer, these little buzzwords we have right now. That could not be further from the truth. What we actually have is the corporatists stomping out the last opportunity for Democrats to battle any kind of deregulation, which, as we all know, caused the crash of 08 and practically every other crash. But what we have here right now is the last throes of our country, and this is part of it. Because I'm surprised you didn't mention the telephone call from David Koch, or the pretend David Koch, to Governor Walker, and you see how he jumped right on the phone, and we see it's a concerted effort to do this. Because people want to say, all right, to put it in a nutshell, it's not about unions getting more than what they deserve. This is about stopping Democrats' last source of income. Republican source of income is from rich people. Democrats' right. source of income is from unions. Once you get rid of the unions, then there is no source of income to stop anything. And I also reference the most recent Supreme Court ruling that said General Motors, General Electric, any other big global company has the same amount of right as any one vote, one citizen does.
Okay. Well, I'd like to comment on a couple of those things that you've mentioned. First off, like I said before, I said there was two sides to every coin. Now, there's two types of unions out there. There's private unions that revolve around corporations and industry, and there's public sector unions, those public servant unions. I'm addressing those public servant unions right now. See, because I do have a say there, because those are my servants.
Okay, I understand. I don't want to get caught up in the minutia here, because you can, whichever union you want to talk about, public sector or private unions, you would have to admit that those unions are more likely than not to donate to Democratic contestants or Democratic.
I'll be honest with you. I don't think that they should be. I don't think that they should be contributing at all. Period. I think it's unconstitutional. In fact, I think it's a violation of the Constitution. I believe it creates a special interest party out there, and therefore creates special interest politics, which is how we got here to begin with.
Exactly. I think we need unions, though. We just need to get the corruption out of them and get them doing what their, you know, primary goal is to represent the people, you know, to give the people a voice, you know, to make sure that, you know, people in the workplace are given fair wages, fair treatment, fair benefits. It's vital, critical that we don't lose that infrastructure. We just need to reform it just a little bit. That's all. I don't want to see the unions go away. It would be a big loss.
And use the word corruption in the same sentence as you use unions. Well, where's all this corruption? Are we talking about Jimmy Hoffa? I mean, if it wasn't for unions, I mean, look, there would be no 8-day work week. We would work seven. If it wasn't for unions, we would work 7 days a week. And when you drop dead, they would just push you out the door and fill in the spot. You understand?
Well, okay, hang on. Let's go back to how our country was originally founded. Okay, let's look at this. See, right now you're looking at it from that the Democratic left right paradigm. But let's really look at how our country was formed. Hang on. Let me talk. Let me speak. We were meant to be an agricultural society. Our middle class was the landowners. We produced for ourselves. We provided for ourselves. We were free. Then during the Industrial Revolution here, they needed to get those landowners off the land into the cities to create a working class. And that is the only reason that you need unions today. Now, if we'd gone back, if we had stuck with how our country was first founded, landowners, free men on the land, we wouldn't need unions today. You wouldn't need as much government. You wouldn't need anybody to create a special interest voice for you. You could produce off the benefit of your own labor. What would you need to have a union for then? You would be responsible for yourself. That's what we're trying to back.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, no, go ahead. That's what we're trying to get back to. So, you know, I mean,
right.
You know, we keep talking about Democrats and Republicans. You know, bottom line, they're all crooks. They're all thieves. They all steal from you. They all infringe your freedom. There has not been a single Democrat who has ever done anything that has not violated the Constitution. There has never been a Republican who has not done something that has violated the Constitution. They are all criminals. They all work towards the same goal and the same agenda. And everything that you see out there are just little chess pieces being moved around the board to give you an illusion that there's actually democracy in this country.
This whole right-left paradigm, the two-party monopoly system, there's nowhere mentioned in the Constitution. This is not what the framers had intended.
This is not how our country was created or founded. This is that democracy. And these arguments that you're bringing forth to us, these are supporting that democratic government system that we have now. That's where these ideas come from. Let's look back to that republic and how it was then. Because that's when we were free.
See, as one angry brother can tell you, that I am definitely not into this whole the two-system Republican-Democrat thing. That's what's killing us. I definitely agree with that. However, I do feel as though your argument is somewhat specious in the fact that you try to go back to the very embryonic stages of our republic, because back then we didn't have indoor plumbing either. You know what I'm saying? So there's a lot of stuff that's different right now. You can't go back to 1776 and try to make it applicable to today. Right now we had an industrial revolution.
We can. Why can't we? I hear people tell me that, but they never tell me why we can't. I don't understand. Why can't we?
It's more complicated than that. You know, we need
okay, explain to me. Explain to me why though. You can't just say it's more complicated. On this show, we get into the actual issue, so you got to explain to me why we can't.
I appreciate that, and I will right now. You stated earlier that over a quarter of America's population lived on the farm. A quarter of the America's population lived on the farm. That means they were self-sufficient. They didn't need anything. They had their gun. They had their seeds. They had their animals, and they didn't need any kind of government intervention. Right now, 99% of all Americans live in some sort of urban situation. The 99% of income wage earners in America earn their income through work, through some kind of factory or some kind of boss. Now, there's a certain relationship between the worker and the boss. And 9 times out of 10, you need a certain intermediary between the worker and the boss. That intermediary happens to be the unions, because if it wasn't for the unions, the boss would say, hey, you going to work like those people over in China and build this iPhone for 31 cents, because if you don't, I got somebody from Mexico that will run up here right now and do it for 31 cents. And
these problems only arose after our government became corrupt and stepped away from the republic. These problems only arose then. These are all problems that have arose since we've broken away from the Constitution.
You're trying to oversimplify.
Hey, Rick. Uh-oh.
Oh, hang on. We got somebody that wants to come on as well. We got Lori. We got another caller in as well, who I guess who wants to throw their two cents in. So okay, come on board. The more the merrier.
Hey, Lori.
I wanted to talk about, and was intending to talk about, the other side of the coin on the Wisconsin union situation. And I agree with the caller that we have on some of the issues that he's talking about. There definitely is two sides to this. Now, first I'll tell you, I'm not a lover of unions. However, I am always a lover of the truth. And I always am part of hating scams on the American people and our way of life. And what's going on in Wisconsin, in my opinion, is a total scam. What the caller was trying to talk about earlier was about David Koch, who somebody prank called the governor of Wisconsin and was able to get right through to him because the Koch brothers own a huge bit of corporate business inside Wisconsin. And this governor that's supposed to be such a great man, apparently if you're a big corporate guy, you could get right through to him because they, quite frankly, got him elected through their pockets. And a lot of this, what is going on with busting up the union, and that's what it is. They are busting up that union. It is a fact, and has been widely reported, that the union leaders from day one agreed to all pension and all these things they were arguing about. The union agreed to the terms. And the governor said, no, thank you. I want to break up the whole bargaining process. This is a bunch of crap, folks. And I can't believe so many patriots are falling for this BS. The facts don't weigh out. This governor is intentionally busting up the union or else. The union leaders are on record everywhere. This whole situation could have been averted. They agreed to everything, and that wasn't good enough because it wasn't good enough for the corporations that funded him. They want the unions all broken down in the state of Wisconsin, period. The public ones, the private unions, they want it all dissolved in the state of Wisconsin entirely. And I'll tell you, that's what's going on, and this is what they're doing. They knew that the left-right paradigm was not working on the American people. It's not effective anymore. Too many people were waking up, so they tried the race card. They know that people are uniting. They don't care about race. That wasn't working. So now they did the last thing left. That's the union, anti-union controversy to get people riled up and fighting against each other. They've done it. It's rippling across our country. God damn it, it's working. And I'm sick and tired of people that say they're awake and they've fallen for the latest scam. This is a scam, people. It is a scam to divide us a different way. And I'll tell you, you know, I'm sorry to, you know, I didn't mean to cuss, but, you know, it really gets me frustrated that people that I didn't think would fall for this are all falling for it. So I'm really frustrated about it because, you know, so many subjects, everybody is great. They do their research, but hardly anybody did their research on this one. I did. There's a whole nother story. There's a whole nother scenario going on here. And I'll tell you, even though in the past I don't like unions, in this situation, with our country not being have wages that anybody can live on anymore, let's get real. The average American is working two jobs. They have hardly any time with their children. You know, everything is breaking down. And right now, if somebody could hold on to a decent wage, I'm all for it. I've changed and reversed my view because where we are right now is Americans are holding on for dear life to keep their homes and food on their table. And this caller, when he said that this is the last straw, I totally agree with him. This is the last straw for any American that makes any bit of even half a decent wage. They're going to lose it. Okay, so when he said that, I totally agree with him. He's right on the money. The other issue is, do you know that Wisconsin, I looked this up in Wisconsin Teacher Association data, these teachers that Fox and everybody else is portraying with these $78,000 a year, $84,000 a year salaries is total bullshit. They actually starting teacher salary, according to the official data, they are ranked 49th out of 50. They are on the bottom.
That's
they
true.
They make $25,000 a year to start out as a teacher in Wisconsin. Would you be able to work for that if you have student loans on your hanging on your neck from just going to college to become a teacher? No way. So this is, they've planted these figures. They're lying all over the media. The governor is lying about why he's doing this. There's special interest corporate money involved by the Koch brothers and others. This is the last attempt to destroy any American's chance at holding on to a living wage. This is it. And I'm saying this as an anti-union person, but these are different times. We are in different times, folks. This is survival of the American family that we're talking about. And I tell you what, I'll stand up right with them, even though I can't stand unions. Because the fact is the fact. We are holding on to our keeping our families together with some kind of wage where we don't lose our homes and everything else. That's my rant. Sorry, folks, but I had to chime in there. There is another side. I encourage you to start looking at it that way fully. Do some research into the other side of things. You will find that everything I just said is completely backed up. This is a scam, and we cannot fall for it.
Well, you know, I've always felt that if a teacher doesn't like their job or doesn't like the pay, or anybody, not any public sector person, we forget, you know, I believe that civil service is just that. It's a privilege to be a civil servant. Now, I think that, you know, these union problems we have with teachers came about because of the federalization of our schools. We wouldn't have these problems again if our schools
right.
back to our constitutional roots.
You're totally right, Randy. I mean, the whole problem, you know, came up,
which
was
goes back to that whole point. This is what is destroying America, getting away from that Constitution.
Yeah. I mean, we shouldn't even have this issue because teachers shouldn't be federal, you know. We shouldn't have any federal Department of Education getting in the mix of all this anyway. I mean, that's totally unconstitutional. For any of our education system to have become federalized to begin with.
You know, education used to be handled on the local level.
Right.
Yep.
And that's where it should be still with the local. That's what we pay city taxes for and local taxes for our schools locally. You know, like you said, and like you mentioned, the Department of Education is one of the biggest frauds and one of the biggest waste of monies in the federal government. You know, and like I stated when we first got on this topic about unions, you know, my opinion, unions did and do have their place, their right place to be that negotiator, you know, for the people. But the unions of today don't do that. The unions of today are political machines. The unions of today throw millions and billions of dues in these people's money to these political candidates to help get them elected. That's my problem. That's my problem with the unions today.
I agree with that. I'll tell you what happened when I was still living in California. Like I said, I am anti-union. I'm not for people having money siphoned out of their check against their will to pay union bosses so that they can then go ahead, like you said, and donate all this money to things you don't believe in. Because that exactly happened to me. When I was still in California working a job, I was forced within 30 days to join the union that I didn't want to, had no choice. within 30 days, you either join the union or you're out of a job. So, of course, I had to join. Okay. And then everything, all their lobbying and all of that went into supporting candidates and fighting issues that were totally against my whole belief system. So I understand that. But my point is, we are talking about Wisconsin's situation specifically. And that's what I was specifically talking about. Like
right.
I said, I'm not in favor of unions in general. You're absolutely right. But what we've gotten down to, like I said, is there aren't too many Americans in the general populace that are – we also have to see that our wages have gone to nothing.
Well, you know, I want to address that point there. I would like to show something here. Now, Obama, this is something that Obama uses one of his talking points on his State of the Union address. Now, he mentioned a school in Colorado that had graduated 97% of its senior class. The grades were all up. The SATs were up. The ACT scores were up. All of the standardization tests that they give you were up. Now, what he failed to mention and what he failed to tell the people is that that school in Colorado was given freedom from state intervention, was given freedom from government intervention, from federal government intervention. They fired all of their teachers. They only rehired six of those teachers. They were not bound by any union either. They fired all the teachers. They rehired six of them. They brought on all new teachers, which they were able to determine whether they wanted as teachers. And 97% of our high school students graduated for the first time ever, I believe.
I mean, well, you know, the statistics show, I mean, and you go from state to state, you know, whatever. The statistics show that public schools are less adequate than private schools, even private schools, you know, states that, you know, give vouchers, let's say like Florida, you know, they, you know, award vouchers where you can actually send your kid to a private school. You know, these people aren't on the public payroll. They're not on the government payroll. They get paid by their private sector and whatever school system they're in, private school system they're in, you know, by donations, you know, from the parents or things like that, you know, so, you know, it shows that the public school system should not be ran by the government. It's totally inadequate anyway.
I agree with you.
Yeah. Well, another aspect to the, just getting back to the Wisconsin in particular situation, another aspect of this whole thing that's getting out in the media that's really deceptive is apparently the way it is done. These teachers that agree to be part of the pension system agree to get actually physically paid a lower salary. So part of their salary is in lieu of money going into a pension. So they don't see that money at all. So in essence, they are contributing 100% of their wages into the pension system. So conversely, you know, so when the governor's talking about they need to contribute more as if they're not contributing now because people aren't seeing it. They're working for a lower salary so that some of these invisible monies they're not getting are going into some pension plan somewhere, okay? That's what the arrangement is in Wisconsin. So when the governor is deceptively saying that they need to pay more, what he is really saying is that they are going to get a pay cut. So that's what the deceptive part of this whole thing that's going on really is. It's total deception.
Right, and that's what I was saying, you know, that they were already paying into
the
system. They're already paying
now.
So why do they have to pay more? Exactly. That's what I was saying. That's the part that, you know, I didn't get. They're already paying into the system. Why do they need to pay more?
Yeah, they're taking. So, for instance, if you're making $30,000 and you elect to be part of the pension system as a teacher in Wisconsin, then you're all of a sudden making, say, $28,000 or $25,000 a year instead of $30,000. And who? Let's get real, folks. Who knows that they're ever going to see that deferred money? You know, the way the government's been raping pension funds all over the country in every state. These people have been really suckered into taking a lower wage in order to be part of some pension plan that is money that is being deferred for the future that these poor people probably will never see. Okay? And the governor was stepping in wanting them to pay more, representing like they're not paying anything because it's not physically coming out the way we are used to seeing in mainstream workers, a 401k contribution or whatever coming out of your check. So he's preying on dumb people that haven't done their research and don't understand when he says that they're paying nothing. They're deferring their actual salary of what they would have gotten paid if they hadn't said yes to a pension system that they're probably never going to be able to ever collect a penny on down the road. That's what's happened. So
that sounds like our Social Security system.
Exactly. It's the same thing, honey. You got it.
Same thing, exactly.
It's the exact same thing. So we've gotten Americans up in arms fighting and picketing against each other in class envy when these workers haven't gotten over on anything, as usual. The state government of Wisconsin has gotten their money, okay? That's what's happening. That's what's happened here. Yet again, we've got Americans pitted against each other, about on the brink of a civil war over this issue because the union anti-union is so fervent in our country.
Let me jump in real quick. Let me jump in here real quick, though. You know, Major Cross brought up a point, though, that I've been stating about this whole thing. This, again, is not the problem. It is a symptom of the problem. We have gotten away from the Constitution. Now, I find nowhere in the Constitution where it allows for a public sector union, a special interest group, to have say over you or I.
Right. There isn't any basis for almost everything.
We go back. So again, we go back to the death throes of our republic.
Right.
So I mean, the Constitution allows for a private sector union. Then, so are you saying that the Constitution allows for
No, Rick. That's not what we're saying. No, Rick. That's
private
not
sector
what we're
is
saying.
Private sector. That's a completely different thing.
That's totally different.
That's completely different. You're talking about free markets there. You're talking about the right of the business owner and the right of the workers to work there or not work there. Again, that's the freedom of choice.
Yeah, private owner, you know, you're talking about private owners. Private owners can make whatever rules they want to make, and then it's up to the workers whether they want to accept those rules or not. You know, that's the difference between the private sector. You know, that's free market. But when we're talking about the federal...
I beg to differ. I worked for the federal government since 1984, and the federal government is also a boss, and then you should be able to negotiate your terms with them also. And I don't see why you
because tax dollars are paid by we the people. And I will bet 10 to 1 that government job that you have is not constitutionally sound either. It was never intended to exist.
Hey, let me ask you this. Hold on. Hey, Rick, you said that, you know, that you should be able to negotiate with your boss. This is Jerome, man. You say that that you should be able to negotiate with your boss. When you got that job or when you applied for that job, did you not negotiate your salary or did you not, you know, come in at a level that you were acceptable with into that job?
Absolutely.
You know, whether you came
and
in as a...
Throughout the course of the job...
Okay,
I feel you wrong, but throughout the course of the job, The boss might say, hey, you took this job. I promised you $10 an hour, and I promised you a 10-day work week. However, the next day he might come in and say, you know what, times are tough. We need to make cuts. You know what, you're going to have mandatory overtime. Matter of fact, we're going to get rid of all the safety stuff. It costs us too much money to supply you with safety goggles and gloves. So from here on out, no goggles, no gloves, and you're working 10 hours extra overtime. Oh, what are you supposed to do then? Just individually talk to the boss and just go start all over, get a new job after working there 11 years or whatever? You know what I'm saying? You need collective bargaining. No, you can't do that to me. You need collective bargaining to be able to preclude the boss from running roughshod over the individual worker. That is what the deal
see,
is.
See, but
you know that, you know what's funny about that?
You have labor laws that protect you from that in the federal government. You don't need unions. You have labor laws.
Labor laws through negotiations.
The labor laws did come as a result of the good work in the very beginning of unions. And then the unions, you know, turned into something else. Most of our labor laws were worked on from the unions back when we needed unions, in my opinion.
No one has a right to work. I can't find anywhere in the Constitution where it guarantees anybody the right to work.
There's a clause there about pursuit of happiness. I mean, work is part of happiness, you know what I mean?
It doesn't guarantee you the right to happiness. The pursuit of your happiness, your ability to go after your happiness, it doesn't guarantee that you will get it.
I mean, because truth of the matter is, I mean, in your life, liberty and pursuit of happiness, your pursuit of happiness may be being an entrepreneur. You don't have to work for anybody, truthfully. I mean, if you're ingenious enough in an entrepreneurial spirit to where, you know, you can make your own way or you can, you know, create your own business, then that's pursuit of happiness right within itself. So you don't really necessarily have to choose to work for anybody.
Right, truly. But, the Constitution is a living document. There are many amendments to the Constitution.
No. It is not a living document. It is a stagnant document that cannot be changed unless it is done by the will of the people.
Right. So it does change.
We have forgotten that. And most of these changes that have been done in violation of the will of the people and against the very Constitution itself.
Well, you know, it's very hard to make an amendment. Three-quarters of the Congress.
Then, there was a reason it was meant to be hard. There was a reason for that.
And it is hard. And these amendments did not come easy. But make no mistake, there are amendments to the Constitution. The Constitution is not the same Constitution that was laid out in the 1700s. This is a different Constitution.
Most of those amendments were created illegally. They were not ratified, is my point. There was a reason that those amendments were supposed to be so incredibly difficult to make, so things like what we have today could not happen. And like I said earlier, all of these problems that we're talking about right here with the unions and everything, and these public sector unions, these are not the problem. These are a symptom of the problem that we face in America. All of these little things that we quiver and bicker about, these are all symptoms of the problem. And they're not going to be fixed by going after the symptom.
No.
We got to fix the problem.
The key to success of the American people is unity. Quit letting yourself be divided over what we're just now bickering about or any other issue that divides us. The key to getting our country back under the will of the people is complete and total unity. Republicans, Democrats, everything in between or outside the realm, everyone, unions, anti-unions, it doesn't matter. The American people must quit this squabbling and being the victims of these silly divide-and-conquer games once and for all. We need to unite. That is the answer. That is the key. We need to unite on every single level.
Doesn't matter what your religion is,
race is, anything else.
You know what? Here's what I'd like to do. You know, we seem to be stuck on this union thing. And again, like I said, these unions are just a symptom of the problem. You know, the intent of this show was to show that the problems that we're having, not to get waylaid on just one thing. Now,
right.
Again, my point is, let's look at the Constitution. What does it say? I'd like to see the union amendment for public workers. I can't find it. Unions, by the very definition, should have no political say because they are not a citizen. They are not a person. They were only given personagehood by Supreme Court interpretation of the Constitution. The Supreme Court's job is not to interpret the Constitution, but to uphold what the Constitution says and to restrict the unconstitutional advances of Congress and the President. That's their only job.
True indeed.
Well, how about
unions should not have any say?
Yeah.
There is no such thing. Collective bargaining was actually a phrase created by Marx and all them, in fact. It's a socialist phrase. We're not socialists, we're republic. We have to remember this when we're discussing it. Now, honestly, I mean, we got away from a republic, and that's why we have all these problems. We got away from people being landowners and citizens, and we made them workers and employees. And we made them union members. And then all of a sudden, we made everybody a government paycheck holder, a government paycheck recipient. These are the problems that we're looking at.
Right. If the topic of the show really is, you know, the fall of the republic, we need to be talking about what happened at our own White House on February 4th.
Talk about what happened at the White House on February 4th, then. As everybody knows, you know, we keep hearing about Fortress America, the merger of the three countries, Canada, U.S., Mexico. There's other countries in there that you're not told about. For instance, in Canada, back in the 80s on the Wendy Mesley show, Chile was going to be included. So it's not just U.S., Mexico, and Canada.
Right.
But apparently on February 4th, the final document was signed, merging the governments. Now, I've been saying this for a while, but I don't know if many, but you know, several people have said they never heard me say this. The governments were merged a long time ago.
But Canada is officially, as of Harper's visit to the White House a couple weeks ago on February 4th, Canada is officially part of the United States. It's being reported on all foreign news media. It's being kept, of course, as usual, out of the American press. But it was official. That was the reason for Harper's visit to the White House. It's on February 4th. And from what I understand from you, Randy, it's being widely reported inside Canada by Harper now.
Oh, for years now it's been said. I mean, years.
No, but I'm talking about the official, it's done, whatever took place, the last agreement signed February 4th at the White House. It's a done deal.
That was the deal where, if I'm not mistaken, that we both or they agreed to use each other's military to defend each other's countries, and that you're talking about that deal on the 4th, right?
No, well, they've been integrating all the military through NORTHCOM and all that for years. But what I'm saying is it's completed. Canada is officially, as of February 4th, part of the United States of America. The border has been erased. It was a border deal that was the last part of the peace. It has been done. And, you know, let me give you an example here of how this could affect me personally. I'm living up here in South Dakota. I work for a trucking company, and I read in some of the press releases in the EU news that one of the three key players on this final deal here was the Canadian Trucking Alliance. Well, you know, now I'm wondering, how is that going to affect my job or the company I work for's business, you know? And, you know, are we going to be flooded all of a sudden across our border with a bunch of Canadian truck drivers coming down here and taking all our business away? You know, how soon is this change going to take place? Because I wasn't happy to see, you know, the whole thing was finalized. And then number two, I wasn't personally happy to see either that the Canadian Trucking Alliance was one of the key three players in this whole deal. So, I mean, this is something that's going to start affecting all of us very soon. And our usurper in chief hasn't even told us yet. Harper's told Canadians, but Obama hasn't even told us yet, you know? And
right,
it just gets...
I'm sorry, but the phrase I heard was North American Union. And the North American Union is the combining of Canada, United States, Mexico, and Central America.
Right,
it will affect your job because you will soon be inundated with a bunch of Mexican truck drivers. Because when it comes to unbridled corporatocracy, the dollar will go to the lowest bidder. It goes to whoever
right.
can do the job the cheapest with the least amount of money.
Yeah, now let me stop you for a second. You know, that is the end game goal, is all three. But
right.
from what I understand in all these latest news reports in the foreign press is that the Mexico part of it has not been completed. So right now it's two-thirds of the way on to the NAU.
Once we erase the southern border and they have free reign over our highways and byways just as much as an American trucker does, trust and believe that American trucker that's expecting to get $2 a mile for his work, that will be cut down to 15
right.
cents a mile. I promise you.
Well, yeah. I used to be part of an association of used to communicate with an association of owner operators here. And the fact is that when California clamped down the regulations on truck drivers coming into the state for emissions and all that, our government made it so that a lot of our owner-operators that own their own trucks and are barely holding on financially could not come into the state of California for a while anymore unless they either did all these thousands of dollars of work on their rigs, or they bought new ones in order to comply with California's new standards. Now, this was a few years back. What did our government do? We sent millions of our tax dollars to companies in Mexico so that they could buy new trucks so that they could start going into California because they met the regulations. This is what happened, and if you talk to owner-operators that are involved in all of that situation, this was like a conversation a few years ago, folks.
We're getting kind of off-topic here. We're seriously delving way off-topic from where we were.
Okay, I'm sorry.
So, and this is kind of why I don't do these type of shows. I don't discuss people and events because it's a waste of time anyways. You know, this show is more supposed to be about the problems in America that we're facing, the death throes of it, how they're unconstitutional, where we're going to go with it. We were not looking at, you know, discussing these little finite little points. And
Because
all of these are just symptoms again.
Right.
You know, we're trying to find out, you know, what are these main problems, you know, how our country has died. The steps that we've gone through to die, what are we going to do to fix it?
Frankly, I would like to get back to the original topic also. And let's put it this way. The original topic, in combination with the whole union thing, is like this. It's like, if you like to go back to the beginning, to the inception of our union, to the inception of our country, when our country was first founded, we were a lot more equal than we are right now. Right now, the top 1% of Americans own more wealth than the bottom 95%. And you cannot tell me that in 1776 that was the case. That's the whole case is different now. And right now the unions is the last little sliver of preventing the 1% from controlling the bottom 99%. And once the top 1% have 99% of the wealth, I mean, we have an oligarchy here that will be irreparable. And we should be on the side of those people that's trying to stop the oligarchies from taking over the whole system. That 1% controlling 99% of all the wealth. That imbalance in its end of itself will exacerbate the death row of this country. And that's the only, that's the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna try to bring it back home as far as, as far as what we need to do, you know, whether you want to call it a real revolution or nonviolent or what we need to do. I mean, in my opinion, it has to take some form of revolution. Okay, you know, and I'm not speaking of, you know, a non-constitutional or a violent revolution. I mean, but I'm talking about a smart revolution, you know. And so I think the real revolution will take place, you know, when people realize that indeed what's really happening to us, okay, and who's behind it, okay. And then virtually not or no longer paying it to that corrupt system, you know. I mean, and if this translates into boycotting the corporate, you know, combines, you know, behind the policies, you know, that we're talking about there and replacing their system, you know, with something that benefits us and not benefit them. And pretty much, you know, it's like, you know, the war on terror, you know, we need to stop, you know, falling for the war on terror. I know, you know, our troops, you know, and I'm actually part of those. We have to, I guess, quote unquote, follow orders. But sometimes, hey, you may have to say, you know, enough is enough, because they're taking us back to war, folks. Okay, they're taking us back to another unconstitutional war, and it's gonna happen. I see it writing on the wall every day.
Who is they, though?
Okay,
who is they,
so
brother, who is they?
Our government. they meaning our government and the people that run the government, and it's corporate America. Corporate America.
Our government is being ran by the Koch brothers, David Koch, who made who was the fictitious phone caller to Walker. And you see how he answered the phone. It's the corporatists. The corporatists run the government, as you very well know. It's not Obama taking us to war. You know he's not making that decision. The decision is being made by GE, who builds these extra engines for planes, just merely out of profit. You know, who wants to go to war merely for the bottom line? That's who
yes,
they
see,
are.
But the bottom
they
line is that. Yeah, but the bottom line is that they need us. We don't need them. I mean, and that's the big secret, you know. And I think we get our freedom back as soon as we take back our responsibilities for food, for water, security, our monetary system, our power, our manufacturing. That's independence. That's what we need to
absolutely
go back to.
Absolutely.
Independence is freedom, okay? Freedom is independence. We'll never be free as long as we depend on these Fortune 500 corporatists, you know, for our survival. So fixing these problems unfolding overseas starts with fixed problems in our own backyards, okay? You know, we need to boycott the globalists. We need to cut off their support. We need to undermine their system, like, say, Randy and, you know, I know Gary, you know, committees of safety, you know. And once we undermine their system, they lose their ability to commit these atrocities, okay? That would be the real revolution. And that can start today. And I'm not talking about burning cities or any mass rebels or waving flags or anything like that, but communities no longer dependent and fueling a corrupt system that we all know must come to an end. I'm talking about, you know, stop shopping at Walmart, you know, stop drinking the Pepsi, you know. I mean, the founding fathers didn't drink the British tea, so why are we using their system? Why are we keep putting money in their pockets? Because as long as we keep putting monies in their pockets, then they're going to be able to control us, you know.
Your
wife
is whooped.
We're whooped?
People won't stop buying in to their game.
Right, that's the whole thing.
I mean, like 3 years ago, I turned off my television. I get better sources of information, real news online, you know, and I turned off my television. That was one first step. You know, I try and go to a small business if I know of one that has something, you know, that offers the same thing as Walmart or whatever. I try and find a small business and give them the business. I mean, there is, you know, like you were saying, there's a lot of things we could do. And it starts with turning your television off, turning your computer on if you have one, or go to the library, start get educating yourself, doing some real research, and stop giving them money. Stop giving them ratings to propaganda U.S. You know, I mean, there are a whole bunch of little things we could do like that to starve the beast, you know.
Well, let's look at how the Founding Fathers did it.
I'm doing it is, I hate to say it again, but since the topic at hand, but if you crush the unions, you will be doing nothing but giving the corporatists more money, period.
Which unions? I thought we were talking about public sector unions. I thought the school teachers were public sector unions, not corporate unions.
No.
Randy, honey, we're not talking about you again, we're way off topic here.
And seriously, I don't normally do this, but you know, if we need to ask people to mute the mics, so we can actually try and stay on topic here. You know, I'd like to do that. Yeah, I really would like to stay on topic. This is why we don't do shows like this, by the way, people. Normally, we discuss solutions and stuff. We don't really discuss the events and the problems that are going on. We discuss the ways to fix them for this reason. It's really hard to stay on topic because everybody wants to keep going back to the left-right paradigm, and we never see the truth for what it really is. All of these are just the symptoms of the problem. The problem is we've gotten away from the Constitution and what is lawful.
Well, okay, I thought the subject was death of the Republic, okay? Okay, so if that's, you know, you were going to do a show tonight that didn't talk about...
The Republic is away from the Constitution. It's getting away from the Constitution, our imperialism, our economic, you know, the disparaging of our economic dollars, getting away from gold and silver like is lawful. You know, we could sit here and talk about immigrant workers all day long, and the problem's never going to be resolved, and everybody, you know, and the problem, everyone think the problem is immigrant workers or the southern border. I mean, you know, we could sit here and talk about JFK's assassination all day long, and that is just another symptom of the problem. How did we get here? The problem is that we got away from the Constitution.
How do we get back? We can disparage
unions all day long, and the bottom line is, I cannot find anywhere in the Constitution where a union has any say. I cannot find one place in the Constitution where a union or a corporate organization or any political special interest group has any say. And yet we want to say...
I mean, that's a seriously oversimplification of what's going on. You keep saying you want to go back to...
It's not an oversimplification. Really, it is not an oversimplification. It is not an oversimplification.
Yeah, look, indoor plumbing is not in the Constitution, but we got it. You know what I mean? Actually,
indoor plumbing was addressed in the Constitution through the right of pursuit of happiness. If indoor plumbing makes you happy and you wanted it, you better figure out how to get it.
And when I said that about unions, you discounted it.
Unions are organizations of people who have a political say now in the government. Beyond their individual say as a person.
I mean, so the question is, how do we get the government, how do we force the government back to the Constitution? You know, that's the question.
Then we're talking back on a solutions show that I thought this was not supposed to be. So that's why I'm confused as to what the topic really was, because we're getting back into talking about solutions, which I thought Randy wanted this show to not be talking about.
I kind of made it clear. You know, when we looked at the dissolution of the destruction of Rome, it went through very specific steps. The primary steps were, one, the destruction of the citizen body; two, taking people off the land; three, imperialism, wayward wars; four, the destruction of their currency; and most importantly, though, the destruction of their culture. The death of a culture always precedes the death of a nation. I mean, we can sit here and argue about unions all night. We can keep the show going until midnight. Well, it'll never go anywhere other than where it's been going now for, I don't know, an hour and a half.
Right, but I think we're getting caught up in minutia of the specific union situation and not seeing the big picture.
I see the big picture. Unions are illegal. A union is a corporate body that has a political say. Show me in the Constitution where that exists. Please.
No. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying if the topic is the death throes, basically, of our republic and way of life.
Okay, again, we're talking about unions. Lord, you keep going back to unions. There's two types of unions, public sector unions, corporate unions.
Okay, honey, this is the point.
All unions. And
what you're seeing ripple across the country right now,
right.
If you think that is limited to public unions and not all unions, you're no way.
And again, should those unions have any say? Do they have any say politically?
They shouldn't have any say politically. It shouldn't even be a political issue. It's been turned into that, obviously. But what I'm saying is the big picture.
Oh, well, where do we go from here then, Lori? I mean, if we want to stay on these subjects, where do we go from here? And how are we going to, you know, and... I mean, shit, I got 10,000 things. Let's talk about... We could talk about Ashwander versus...
We want our republic to fall quicker.
Talk about everything.
Buying into this divide and conquer.
Well, there's a point we can get on. The divide and conquer, the death throes of America, our republic. Let's look at the divide and conquer. We used to have one culture, one, you know, a way of life. We used to have... one idea of what freedom was. Now that's changed. I mean, even now, we got people that are anti-union defending unions. We got public sector people thinking that they control your paycheck and they can tell you what to do with your money. So, yeah, where we go.
But she made a great point of the divide and conquer. Right now we are being divided on the lines of supposedly the buzzword is taxpayers versus public sector unions. Like they're two different people. Like she said, once they get rid of the public sector union, then they're going to go after private unions. Then there'll be no unions. Then they'll be like, okay, you build an iPhone for me for 31 cents an hour, or I'll find somebody else to do it. And then where are we at that point? That's the whole point, and that is very much on topic because that is part of the whole death throes of our country. If everybody's working for 31 cents an hour and all we can do is basically, if 98% of the population can only afford a shack on the side of the road with an outhouse, then that's a regression, a terrible regression.
Okay, you think so?
I know.
I can tell you why it's not. I can tell you why it's not. See, economics is something I've studied for a long time. You see, if you don't want to work for that employer that's paying you 31 cents an hour, then you go find your own employment. And if you can't find employment that you like, you create your own employment. So then that means you're going over to people's houses and saying, look, I heard you need a deck. Let me build you a deck. And guess what you've just done? You've now created industry. Because you've become your own man. You've become your own sovereign citizen. You've become your own free person. And you've engaged upon your pursuit of happiness. You've engaged in your right to be able to put a roof over your head and not somebody else, and not depending on somebody else or forcing somebody else to give it to you.
Well, I mean, first of all, that argument doesn't hold.
That is true freedom there. That is freedom.
If 98% of the population is under extreme poverty, then there will be nobody to ask to build a deck. This will be another Haiti. You can't go to Haiti and start building decks for Haitians because Haitians don't have any.
We're not talking about Haiti. I don't know what Haiti. I don't care about what's going on in Haiti. To be honest with you, I don't care one bit. Haiti could disappear tomorrow. It wouldn't concern me any more than I am today.
The reason I brought up Haiti is because under Europe, America will regress.
The U.S. My only concern is the U.S. I don't know what happens in Haiti, to be honest with you.
Okay, I'm using Haiti as an example of what America would look like if we went by your plan.
Really?
If we went by your plan, I'll
tell you what America looked like when it went by my plan. For over 100 years, our currency value fluctuated plus or minus no more than 6%. The American citizens were, by a large majority, landowners who did not pay taxes on their land, which means their land could not be taken from them. Now, this is what happened when America was run the way I'm talking about it being run. There was one vote per person, per man.
Yeah, that's before they had airplanes, though, correct?
I mean, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. What does an airplane have to do with the fact that our dollar was sound and that we were free? What does the creation, what does the invention of an airplane have to do with that? You keep going off on these, what is the guy? Saul Alinsky, Rules for Radicals. You keep converting the subject, you know, the thing from very specific points to plumbing in airplanes.
I mean, you're going back 200 years ago, then 300 years ago, and it's a different situation now. Period.
No, it wasn't. How was it different?
Well, like I said earlier, over 25% of the population were self-sufficient on their own land. That's not the case
right, but
now
because
you
we're not.
You cannot go back to over 50 million people becoming farmers all of a sudden. That's not
okay.
The case.
Well, let's get into that. Let's get into what are your ideas then? We keep taking from the 40% of the American people that are working, that are paying taxes, and keep giving them to the ever-growing 60% that is growing more and more daily. Now, with that mentality, what happens when we reach 100% of the people and nobody's working and everybody's getting a government check? What do we do then? Or, better yet, what do we do when these unions bust the backs of the American taxpayer and there's nobody left to have a job to pay you guys? What are you going to do then?
I'll tell you what. Let me tell you like this. When John F. Kennedy took office,
What are you going to do then?
Okay, I'll tell you. I'm about to tell you right now. When John F. Kennedy took office, the top tax rate was 90%. Right now, the top tax rate is 39%. What I would do, I would not go all the way back to 90%, but I would gradate from a millionaire should not be paying the same amount of taxes as a high school teacher. A millionaire might need to pay 42%. A billionaire might need to pay 60%.
Well, hang on. Let's take a look at that, though. Isn't that tax illegal, though? That income tax is illegal, though.
Income tax is illegal anyway.
Income tax is illegal.
Income tax is totally unconstitutional. You know, it's definitely illegal, and it should be abolished. The IRS should be abolished because all that is really is theft because they take it out of your paycheck and you don't get to give it to them anymore like it used to be, whether you voluntarily, you know, so they just take it from you now. So, you know, the thing about, you know, income tax and Social Security tax and things like that, if they abolish that system and let people keep their money, you know, that would be one way to energize the economy, one way for this country to get back on track, because people may be able to create, you know, jobs by owning businesses and things like that. I mean, because the bottom line is, you know, we can talk about unions, we can talk about, you know, whatever. The bottom line is, until we bring manufacturing back into this country, until we bring back, you know, the gold standard, the silver standard, get rid of this fiat currency that's nothing but a Ponzi scheme anyway. Until we do that and get back to the Constitution, get rid of the Federal Reserve Bank and put the power to print money or coin money back to the Congress, back to the United States Treasury, nothing's going to change because, like Randy said, they're all crooks, they're all stealing from us, and we're falling for the scheme, and we keep falling for it until we stop falling for the scheme. Okay, and put the pressure on them and take it off us, then nothing's going to change.
I agree 100%.
I agree 100%. The American people, you know, your wages are your own personal property. If we want to pay for very tiny, tiny services,
Hang on. Real quick. Collins usually don't take over the guest slot here. I really wanted to hear One Angry Brother's role in this, you know, his ideas on this. I wasn't looking for a big round table discussion on this. Callers were able to call in with questions to the guest, not to be the guest themselves. So if you don't mind, can we get the callers to either mute themselves or, and we'll go back to our guest. That's really what I was looking at here. You know, One Angry Brother had a direction this wanted to go tonight, and I'd like to hear what his ideas were.
Well, you know, Randy, I just really put them out there, you know, earlier, you know, through the dissertation and stuff like that, you know. We have to take care of America. We have to fix our problems in our own backyard. Like I said, one of those things, we need to find a way to get back to constitutional standards. Bring in, you know, we need to start at the local levels. We need to start, you know, shopping at our farmers markets. We need to start bartering if we have to, but we need to start somewhere. We need to start locally, and to bring it back to where we're not reliant on the federal government. The people of the United States are too reliant on the federal government, whether it's the federal jobs that most people have, you know, and that's fine, you know, whether it's welfare, whether it's the food stamps or whatever. We're too reliant on the government, and as long as we are reliant on the government, we're going to be slaves to that government. And so we need to get away from that, and we need to find ways to get away from that, you know, and we need to start in our local communities. You know, that's the bottom line.
Well, you know, I think Jefferson said that we were going to lose our republic when we got off the land. I believe that was him. There's so many damn quotes out there and 10,000 books rattling through my head. I'm kind of mixing and matching them anymore, I find.
I think you're right. I think it was Jefferson that said that.
So let's talk about, you know, how if getting off the land was going to be the death of our country, how do we get back? You know, where did that begin? I mean, how did they get us off the land? Why did they get us off the land? And where? And isn't that kind of being in the cities? This whole, like what we were talking about, you know, these unions, these city jobs, this reliance upon business and government to provide us for our income. Isn't that that enslavement that I think Jefferson was warning about? What do you think?
Well, yeah, I think so, definitely. When did we get off the land, and how did they do it? It started with the New Deal. I think after they collapsed the system, you know, with the Great Depression, and they gave us the New Deal. That started people relying on the government. We got Social Security. We got, you know, the Medicare. We got different programs that made the people rely on the government instead of relying on themselves, instead of relying on their farmers, relying on their skills, you know. So, I mean, free money, they saw free money, you know, and once you see free, you know, it's easier to spend other people's money than it is your own. You know, or take something free and not have to work as hard. So I think it all started with the New Deal when the gifts started to be given out.
Now, you know, we talk about the farmers and things like that. You know, but I think part of that, you know, being taken off the land also meant working our own skills. Not everybody was required to be a farmer. For instance, that farmer needed carpenters. He needed blacksmiths. So from around that agricultural base, though, was industry and other outlets for industry were created as well. Which
true
meant
enough.
Us enough. Engaging in our skills and our trades.
No, and we still have that today. I mean, we still have, you know, the entrepreneurial spirit, I think. It's just that regulations and the government has made it, and all these different laws and things that we have to keep up with, it makes it too hard, and that's by design to keep us dependent on the government. And that's my thing. We need to get away from dependent on the government. You know, we need to go back to, you know, opening up the mom and pop stores and stop shopping at Walmart. You know, those are the things that made America. You know, like it was the mom and pop stores, it was the farmers, it was the ranch hands, you know, it was the ingenuity of America. You know, and of course, you know, corporate America came in, you know, with the cars, you know, stuff like that. And you know, it all evolves, you know, and it has all evolved, but you know, it's still manufactured in the U.S. We need to bring it back, you know, because true enough, we're in the 21st century, you know, and we're in this electronic stage. We're in this, you know, we don't farm anymore. You know, we're not back in the days, you know, like we used to, but we still have that ingenuity to where we can create jobs here and things like that. But we don't, because, you know, it's not profitable anymore, I guess, to create jobs, to have jobs in the United States or to manufacture in the United States. So, and I think the government, the federal government is the biggest part of that because of the regulations and things. It makes it too expensive for companies to operate here or for people to have businesses here.
Yeah, absolutely. They give all the tax breaks to the outsourcers. Oh, well, let's send all this stuff overseas. And they get a huge tax benefit from doing it. It's ridiculous. It should be exactly the opposite. If you want to outsource something, fine, but you're going to pay for it. Make it where it's cheaper to do it locally.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. If you want to move your, Yeah, if you want to move your company out of the country, then you're going to pay tariffs on your stuff coming back in. You're going to pay 100%. You know, how many companies would move out of the United States if they had to pay 100% tariffs to sell their stuff back to us? None. So that would mean jobs for the U.S. But, you know,
exactly.
And that's why, you know, we need to, you know, elect officials. I mean, more people, more common sense people, because there's a bunch of common sense people right in this forum, you know, more common sense people in America need to run for office. They need these positions in office in the local communities all the way up through the federal government, because and that's one way to take back the country is people have to run. And they make that so hard with, you know, the money that you have to pay to get on the ballot, you know, and things of that nature. You know, it's ridiculous, but they gamed the system. You know, the system is gamed, you know,
they
against
turned
people
the system
that don't
into
have
a
money.
Game.
Yeah. You know, so, I mean, but, you know, but I think we need to start by, you know, coming back to the local communities and doing things locally, Randy, seriously.
Well, you know, one of the things that amazes me when I read the Constitution and I read about life during the colonial days and, up, you know, 100 years up until we started losing our freedom with the Civil War and well, Lincoln. It started long before then. I mean, you know, the Constitution was under attack before the ink was even dry. But everything was local. Everything began on the local level. Power, the civil authority, militia were local. There was no state group. There was no big national organization. And that's what happened in Rome as well. When they started taking those farmers and moving them away, you know, putting them in the legions, making them go away for years, and everything was local, and it became big, huge, gigantic plantation owners then, people who owned all the land, you know, where less than 2% of the people owned any land anymore. You know, and everything began locally there, and they said that's how we were going to keep our power was locally.
Right, but we gave it away, you know, and not us, but, I mean, you know, 100 years ago, you know, if we were to follow Jefferson's words and every 100 years there need to be a revolution to reset, then maybe we wouldn't have this problem right now because it would be reset. And it just needs to be reset. It really does. Because, I mean, let's face it, the federal government is this big monstrosity and they're not going to give their power back freely. They're not going to give it back, you know, nonviolently because they love to spend our money. You know, it's easier to take our money and spend it and do whatever they want to do with it. I mean, and that's both left, right, because, you know, I'm not a left, right guy. You know, all of them are crooks, you know, and they're stealing from us. And they've committed the biggest theft, you know, of the American people, you know, in the past, you know, 3-4 years, you know, with the bailouts and things like that. And we... And I say we as Americans have really sat on our hands and done nothing about it. So until we do something about it, then they're going to keep doing it.
You know, you talked about that violence part. You know, the government has mentioned, you know, has written 90-page documents about violence. The military, you know, RAND Corporate, you know, the RAND think tank and the government, the Pentagon have put out documents, 90-page documents talking about the foreseen violence coming up in America. We look back at the fall of all the other major empires, and we always see violence at the end as well. None of them ever seem to fall without there being violence. Violence amongst the, you know, violence amongst the government, you know, the government within the government itself on each other, assassinations, things like that, and among those powerful within the government body, violence done by the government to the people. Violence amongst the people on each other, and then violence of the people to the government. Where do you see this going? Where do you see this? What do you see, you know, what are your thoughts on what's, you know, on this violence that might be coming in? You know, good, bad, indifferent? Is it containable? Do we want the violence? Is it a purging thing, a cleansing thing? I don't know. What do you think?
I see rough times coming. You know, if you look around, the situation's really not getting any better. You know, and you know, true enough, the division, you know, of the people. You know, I think Lori mentioned it, that they couldn't do the race thing. Racism, I don't think, is a big issue anymore, because I think people are waking up. I mean, and you look at all of the things that's happening all over the world. You know, it's a domino effect, you know, because if you think about it, you know, what's happening in the Middle East right now, you know, it's going to affect us very, very soon. And you can see that the gas pump, you know, today, you know, gas went up 18 cents. Okay, so if you're talking about, you know, oil going up to $200, okay, let's say a barrel, okay, we're paying $5, $6 at the pump. That means somebody's not eating. Okay, if somebody's not eating, they're going to get hungry. And when people get hungry, that's when violence is going to start to kick in. Because truthfully, that's what's happening in the Middle East. The people are hungry. Food prices are all out of whack over there, you know, and so they wanted some change because they're hungry. You know, so, and there are hungry Americans here, 43 million on food stamps, 14, 15 million out of work. That's a lot of hungry people. So when you have hungry people, you're going to have violence. You know, do I want violence? No, not at all. You know, do they want violence? I think they do. I think they do, because they have the power to squash the violence. You know, I would hate to think that our government, but of course you've seen it before, but I would hate to see that our government would, you know, crack down on the people like that just for march or just for being hungry. But, you know, I don't see it anything good happening at the moment. Because there's too much going on. There's too much criminal activity within our government going on, you know, theft of the people. So it needs to be reset. It definitely needs. And I think it's going to end up being reset by violence, unfortunately.
You know, Aldous Huxley, he wrote Brave New World, and then he wrote again. That was a fictional, you know, that was a story, fictional piece of work. But then later he wrote Brave New World Revisited, where he discussed in a very non-fictional way the coming scientific dictatorship. Now, he said that Rome fell because it could not provide enough bread and circuses for the masses. He says today, in the world today, now this was said in the 60s, it's in an interview or in a lecture at Berkeley. He said that in today's world, with the advent, promotion of the sports teams, you know, our bread and circuses, our entertainment, and our welfare state that we have, and put into place already, they can maintain the scientific dictatorship forever. They can actually bring down those very few dissenters that will dissent, and they're. Scientific dictatorship will stand strong.
Yeah, I can see that. You know, I can agree with that, to be honest, because then that's what people do. A lot of people are wrapped up into their games, you know, into their sports activities. You know, like say a bunch of people here that dumb down society, you know, and they don't see what's going on. So. You know, just like, you know, the Pied Piper that led the mice out of the city to the slaughter, you know, the people will be the same way. Because I don't think that there will be, I don't think there will be enough people to dissent, I think. I mean, we have 300 plus million people in the United States. And I don't even think half of those would even, you know, put up a fight for their freedom, I don't think.
Well,
you know, that's a shame.
When we think back, though, we've got 60% of the government take. So we don't even have half there because, I mean, seriously, how many people on the government take will really risk their food on their table, their home, their family?
Yeah, there was right. See, that's the thing, and that's what I was saying about being slave to the government, because they won't. That's the whole system. That's the plan, to keep them dependent on the government. You know, so when it does come down, those people won't fight. Yeah, you know, that's exactly true. They won't fight, you know. So, you know, but I mean, I have hope for America. I mean, I love this country, and It's where I grew up, and it's all I have. I mean, I've been all over the world, and this is still the best country, and I would live, you know, virtually nowhere else, you know, by my own, you know, volition or volunteering to do so. But, you know, I never dreamed that I would live through or another depression or hard times like this would, you know, that I would see it in my lifetime. But history is repeating itself. History is repeating itself so much. I mean, you can see it, you know, right before your eyes, you know, and it's almost not really scary, but it is scary as well, you know, because you can see it coming and you can hardly do anything about it, almost helpless, because there's not enough people. Not enough people are awake, not enough people, you know, to create a mass, you know, change, you know, right now, you know. But, you know, once people get desperate and hungry, then maybe change will happen. You know, maybe it'll happen.
When Caesar took over Rome, when Caesar crossed the Rubicon and took Rome, the Roman Senate stayed active. It had no power, but it maintained the facade of meeting, gathering, discussing, debating, preaching, whatever. And the people were content with that because it was the familiar. And they kept that up for 100 years. And nobody really even noticed a difference. Nobody cared because things looked the same. They've said that about America, too. They're going to keep things looking pretty much the same, you know, as long as possible. I mean, this is from books for hundreds of years. What do you think it's going to take for the people? I mean, you mentioned that hunger aspect. But we have the welfare state. We have that bread that we can give.
Right. Well, I'll say this with a quote from Marcus Garvey, and he says that if the government can't bring the people together, then their conditions will. So once the conditions on the people are harsh enough, then that's going to bring the people together, and I think then that is going to bring the change that we need in America.
Do you think the people actually come together then? I mean, what have you seen out there? I mean, you talk to people, you're around on forum boards, you hear what people are saying. Do you think people will come together?
Well, yeah,
in a positive way, because we've kind of gotten into the mob rule democracy thing. Will people come together, or will it all the mob rule?
No, I think people come together. Like I say, conditions have a funny way of bringing people together, you know, through the races. You know, it really does. I mean, if you look back, you know, on history itself, I mean, if you look at, you know, from the revolution, you know, the conditions brought them together, you know, the conditions, you know, to separate from the king, you know, all the way up through the civil rights movement, you know, you had black and white people come together for that, you know, in different events throughout, you know, the Vietnam wars, you know, coming up these wars, you know, people are coming together to, you know, speak out against, you know, atrocities in the world, you know. So once, And if you look over, you know, and I hate to use overseas, but overseas is a prime example right now. You're looking at Libya, you're looking at Egypt, you're looking at Ireland, you're looking at stuff. All those people had their lives to live, but their conditions and not wanting to be slaves anymore, not wanting to live under, you know, certain conditions, that brought those people together. Same thing I feel would happen here in the United States once the conditions get bad enough. And unfortunately, that it has to get bad enough, you know, for the people to come together and see that. Now, that's the issue. I mean, because if you think about it, I mean, you know, I know Rick had talked about it. There's so much separation between rich and poor, you know, between middle class and poor. Well, that separation between the middle class and the poor is starting to shrink. Okay, you know, where it's almost two classes of people. So that's one, that's going to form, I think, one group of people, you know, where their conditions are going to bring them together eventually.
Well, you know, the separation of the classes that you know, the disparity, you know, the destruction of the middle class was written about long, long ago. One of the most famous ones was, was Marx's books. You know, Das Kapital, read Das Kapital. He talked about the ways they were going to destroy the middle class. One of those ways he was talking about was getting people off the land, union, you know, the industrial revolution in the U.S. that would need to take place by bringing in those workers from the land and putting them in factories, creating such terrible conditions for them to work in that then they would have to bring in unions, which were a very socialist thing. They would have to bring in the unions to give the people the illusion that these unions were going to work for them to get them rights, where in the meantime, these unions would actually become a political force within the government instead of we the people being that political force within the government. This would lead way to other special interest groups opening up. And somewhere along the way, that we the people would forget that we were the sovereign body. We were that political force, not these groups. But we would look to them to save us. You know, these national organizations to come save us, because that's what we've been taught now for over 100 years. We'll leave it to these big guys to save us. So far they failed. You know, the Tea Party candidates, you know, they got a bunch of people in and they all kind of went bad on us. They all voted, you know, I think all but 10 voted for
the Patriot Act.
For the Patriot Act. The NRA is voting for gun confiscation. You know, they're actually endorsing laws to take away guns from, well, vets. And you and me and everybody else.
Well, and that's the thing, that, you know, the government now is too big, is not for the people. You know, the politicians, if I could, you know, I, you know, would run today, hopefully, you know, and win, or at least make enough noise. But, you know, maybe I will in a couple of years run for some type of office or whatever. But, you know, more patriot Americans need to run, you know, and, you know, and the thing with the Tea Party, I mean, you know, they got so hijacked, you know, by the Republican Party, you know, and they put their infiltrators in to make it seem like, and like you say, they tricked the people again, you know. It's all about tricking the people, you know, because, you know, I read something say Americans are dumb, you know. Americans are stupid. And the thing is, because Americans don't read, they don't understand what's going on. It's not that they're dumb or stupid. They just don't understand, you know, what's going on. So, yeah, there you go. That's the perfect word for it, is ignorance, you know. And that's because, you know, they're so content, you know, to their own lifestyle. See, and that's what I'm saying. You know, one person is content with their lifestyle. They're not caring about, you know, the person that just lost their house and they're living in Tent City in L.A., okay? But when it happened to them, okay, then they can relate, hey, that's going to bring them two guys together or two people together. So that's what I'm saying. Once the conditions get bad enough for the people to come together, that's when things will change. Until then, we're going to continue to get robbed. We're going to, you know, continue to get, you know, have death throes of America, because we won't be able to get out of them, because people don't even realize that they're in them. You know, so you can't get out of what you don't realize that you're in. And one thing real quick, I want to say something real quick, because I know my wife is listening tonight. Okay. So I want to say hi to her. You know, give her a plug real quick. Hi, Patricia. Love you, babe. And thanks for listening. And also, Lori and Rick, and you know, I know we, you know, sort of, you know, went off on tangents and different things. Hey, but I mean, but they brought some good stuff to the table tonight. You know, I really want to thank them for calling in, you know, and really, you know, giving us something to think about as well, because that's what we need. We need conversation. We need, you know, to make each other think, to bring, you know, more ideas to the table. You know, I mean, but that's where we are, though. I mean, you know, just from the show tonight, you can see we all have different thoughts of where we need to be.
Well, I have a question for you there now. I have a question for you. We're at the 2-hour mark, so I want to close this out now. But I do have a question for you. These differing ideas that we have, we see, you talked about the people coming together. Now, let's talk about another death throw of another country that happened, France, during their revolution. The people came together. They stood up. They overthrew the monarchy. They chopping heads. They were chopping heads in the streets. They got rid of the monarchy. But then those different people didn't have a focus point on what they were actually fighting for. They had forgotten about civil authority, so they had a bunch of armed men. They had no plain idea of what they were trying to get back to. We have all these ideas. Many of them are not constitutional, in fact. I know a lot of people want one thing. Other people want to go back to the Constitution. Other people want something else. So what happens when we come together and we don't have those plans already made?
And then we have chaos. If we don't have plans, we have chaos, no doubt about it. You know, and that's what, you know, I know this group and this forum is about, making that plan, you know, having that plan. And the plan is already written. I mean, it's the Constitution, you know. And, you know, unfortunately, everybody haven't even read the Constitution, don't even know what's in it. But, you know, the document is there. The Founding Father left us a perfect blueprint. If we would only stick to it, we've gone away from it, you know, until we come back to that document, you know, and live under the law of the Constitution, you know, and get rid of all the unconstitutional things that's going on, you know, then, you know, we're still going to have chaos like we have now. I mean, what we have, you know, chaos now. It's just, you know, contained chaos, you know, because, you know, of the laws that's against us, that's truly unconstitutional, that's containing us. But, I mean, we have to have that plan to go back to the Constitution. Everybody has to believe in that plan. When the people do come together, you know, they have to believe in that plan too. You know, that's the thing, you know, but, you know, it needs to start local. It definitely needs to start local. So,
you know, you brought up a good point. The Founding Fathers did leave a plan. You know, if we look back to the, before the Revolutionary period, they started engaging in that. I mean, one of the most prominent periods was the removal of Governor Andros in Massachusetts. The militia understood that it was not a sole and separate entity unto itself. It had to have a civil subordination. So it went to the people, the local people, and it asked them to form that civil body. So they formed a committee of safety. The militia then subordinated to them. The Committee of Safety then said, go and arrest Andros and imprison him. So they shackled him, they threw him into prison, and they kept him there until the king sent for him. And from that point on, everybody began working that similar plan. They began creating those local structures that were outside of the government, a parallel government, if you will. And eventually, as more and more of them started to form and coalesce together, they began implementing full role of government until eventually the Continental Congress was formed. I think they left us the blueprint on exactly how to do it, and they even told us how to do it. You know, there had to be a constitutional convention, a lawful one. You know, not one where you had to join a group to be a part of it, pay to be in there, to be nominated. All these things. We seem to try to implement parts of those plans, but we never actually see the whole plan that they created. And I think you're right. We need to go back and start reading our history.
Need to go back to read history. Because it's repeating. Nobody is reading it. We need to stop the mistakes from the past. You know, we really do. And I agree with the Third Continental Congress. I can go for that.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, at least at that point, you know, the government will have a choice. They'll either hear our demands or they won't. They will either subordinate to the Constitution or they won't. They will either obey the will of the people or they won't, and they will obey obey those restrictions that bind them or they won't. I think at that point they will know that they won't, and then we'll have that tough choice to make on, well, do we dissolve government? Do we implement new government?
Right. And that's going to be a decision that, because, you know, they're not going to give it back, you know, lawfully or unviolently. So, you know, but like I said, that's decision that we're going to have to make. You know, I saw Major, you know, said in the chat room that we need another American Revolution. You know, I wrote about that 3 years ago in RAM, before it was RAM, in another, you know, chat room. But yeah, it's overdue. Now, whether that American Revolution is violent or if it's nonviolent, then that can be up to the government, really. Like you said, if once, you know, hopefully we get this Continental Congress together and give them the list of demands, and then they virtually decide how it's going to be, I guess.
Well, you know, if we look throughout the times, you know, we can either do something now, and we have the only plan in history that worked, the blueprint. We have the only blueprint in history that worked, as well as the instructions from the founders on exactly how to combat this problem. Or we could try and reinvent the wheel, and we can end up like France did after their Civil War.
Now, reinventing the wheel is too hard, too much time, and it's not smart. You know, the wheel is already made. No need to reinvent. Just need some tweaking and some adjustments, a tune-up, if you will, you know, to what we already have. So.
Well, for tune-ups. You know, if anybody is looking out there, like I said, this show is running over, so, you know, I want to thank you for coming on. Do you have anything you want to say in closing? I know you got a family you want to get back to, and I got to eat. I'm starved. I haven't eaten today.
Yeah, I mean, it's late here. You know, my kids are in bed, and my wife is probably wanting to come in, go and get in bed. Hey, but I just want to say that, you know, first, you know, thanks for everybody for listening, coming out, you know, supporting the show. You know, hey, you know, tell your friends, get more people to come out, you know, at least go and come to the chat room or whatever, because that's what it's about, you know, to get like thinking minds together. You know, that's going to be the thing. The more people we get thinking alike and doing the same things alike, that's, you know, the sooner that we'll be able to move towards our goal of going back to the Constitutional Republic that we all love so dearly. So, you know, that would be my closing remark. Talk to people. Get out there, you know, and get them thinking about it, you know, as much as you can. As much as you can. Because we all need to come together and be on the same page.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I got a few things in closing for everybody, and then I'll let Dave say whatever he's got in closing. Tomorrow's show, I've got the Arizona Guard coming on. Now, the Arizona Guard has already had some bills passed, a couple state bills passed in Arizona to create a state guard, a fully militarized state guard, not one of those unarmed state guards. Now, there are some interesting things going on there and some things that I don't know how they fit within the Constitution. In fact, I can't find them in the Constitution, but I'm going to bring them on. Apparently, this state guard is going to be formed, is going to be funded through the National Guard. But it's going to be an LLC as well, which means it has, well, sovereignty. It has subordination to the state secretary of state because it's a corporation. An LLC is a limited liability corporation. So there's two reasons I'm bringing them on. One, I would like, you know, I think we need to hear about these bills that some of these states are starting to pass to, since our National Guards have been federalized, these states are unprotected. They have no armed body to protect them from invasion, foreign or domestic. The other part, though, is I want to discuss this LLC with them. I know that a lot of you are going to have your opinions on that, and I think that we need to have these discussions. Whether these ideas are good or bad, I think we need to have them, because I've seen a few other groups starting to do this as well. And that was another reason I want to bring them on. It's tomorrow, Arizona Guard. Governor is actually going to said that she would sign them into being as an LLC. Which has concern, you know, which raises a lot of concerns in itself. But the fact that these bills are being passed and looked at, I think that's important. Maybe we can build upon that. Next Sunday's show, we're going to have Cavscat on. We're going to be talking about some guerrilla warfare, urban warfare, whatever it is. We're going to be talking about the psychology of it, the implementation of it, the reasonings for it, historical aspects of it, and how it worked and why it worked. How it failed and why it failed. That'll be Sunday's show, and then the Monday after that, we've got the East Washington 63rd coming on. That guy's an amazing man. And I don't really put that accolade on too many people. He's an amazing man. I think you're all going to enjoy them. So other than that, if you have any questions, feel free to drop me an email, randymack@uoftreadonme.com. Show times are Sundays and Mondays, 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard, or 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Start looking at your committees of safety. Start looking at how you can form them. Start looking at what the Founding Fathers did, and let's start implementing that plan. Dave, anything in closing?
Yeah, absolutely. It's quite obvious that this country is suffering as it is because we have gotten away from the founding principles. And it is of dire importance if we want to continue having a free and prosperous nation to get back to that. And we've got to do it from the ground up, you know, bottom up kind of methodology. This top down crap doesn't work and only leads to more trouble. We've got to come together and start having unity and purpose And hopefully it won't take things getting so bad that it's intolerable for it to start happening. You know, and maybe it will, you know, whatever it takes. We're going to be here working on solutions and trying to get them implemented and until we find a restoration for our republic.
All right. Again, I think we should take a lesson from our founding fathers. It all began locally, all power derived from that local body, your individual town, village, hamlet, city, whatever it was. And then it was your county. You told the county what to do. The county told the state what to do. The states told the Fed what to do, to a certain extent, within the confines of the Constitution, of course. And so it should be with militia as well. You know, we have a lot of things to look at and to analyze and to figure out. I think we need to start having these discussions now. So we're going to start having these discussions tomorrow with the Arizona Guard as well. So hope to see you guys then. Take care. Be safe, everyone. Be free.